There's a real fascination with last words. From the mysterious intent of a last will and testament, to the heroic words from heroes and patriots. Here's the last line from Tale of Two Cities. The death of Edward Carton, he was going to be executed at the guillotine. It is a far, far better thing that I do than I have ever done. It is a far, far better rest that I go to than I have ever known. We would all wish to say something so profound if we were on the scaffold there. There's Patriot Nathan Hale's famous line, at least it's attributed to him, "I only regret that I have but one life to lose for my country," before he was executed by the British. But in the quiet, not very literary moments of the executions that have taken place in this country for hundreds of years, what are the last words uttered and heard by people we don't know and will never remember? What's the significance of them? Robert K. Elder has compiled a record of the final words of hundreds of Americans who've died on death row. His new book is called Last Words of the Executed. Elder joins us from his home in Chicago. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning.
I have to say that this book is just fascinating, and it's not clear to me why, but on every single page, there's just a portrait of moments that are unforgettable. Why did you decide to collect all of these last words?
I think because there had been no modern study of last words. I sort of stumbled upon a website that was curated by the state of Texas, and it had a lot of information from its death row, including, you know, case histories and last meals and last words. And after doing a little bit of digging, I just sort of was appalled that there was no sort of modern record. Again, if these are the most reviled, dangerous members of society, I was curious why it was a cultural value to record what they say.
It is a cultural value to record, but you're the only one really to have curated it in a systematic way. As you went over these over time, did categories stick out to you? Are certain last words serving a particular mission?
Last words in general fit into, you know, the five stages of grief, you know, denial, bargaining, you know, et cetera. But then there are also sort of the weird ones that don't fit into boxes. Like I found at least four people who choose to cheer for their favorite football teams.
Go so Raiders. That's Robert Comer, convicted of murder in Arizona, executed in 2007.
Yeah, but you know, things like that, you get sort of the entire range of humanity, which is why the project was so, I was so driven to complete the project.
There's also an out-of-context element here in that some of the words have totally different meanings if you could see the expression on the face, if it was one of fear or one of defiance or one of sadness and tragedy.
Mm-hmm. And I think, to be honest, I think fear is the sort of the through line through for all of them. Even the people who are, you know, very religious or very defiant, I think fear is the undertone that carries through all of them.
Give me a sense of some of the characters who even stand out to you with a single line of their life represented in this last word before they were executed.
Well, there's a guy who I'm sort of drawn to, named Augustus Johnson. He was executed in 1878, and he has sort of a longer, you know, final statement. But I've always loved the line. He says, "I have always been a bad boy. I have killed four men in my life. I can swear to two. I have friends in the crowd who would rescue me, but I want them to let me hang." Which, you know, such amazing intestinal fortitude. You know, he was hanged in front of 10,000 people.
And, you know, here's one of my favorites, 1903, Tom Horn, convicted of murder in Wyoming. "Ain't losing your nerve, are you, Joe?" I gather he's talking to the executioner, right?
Yeah, or the sheriff, yeah.
Would you rather, I mean, did you find that you fit into a particular category? I mean, if you were one of these people, would you do it in a particular way? Would you be the apology guy? Would you be the give a speech? Would you look for something profound, or would you be a little defiant?
Well, I would hope to be memorable, you know, you know, the journalist and historian in me would err on the side of humor, which is probably not the best first instinct, but I think that's what I would try to do. I don't know exactly what my last words would be, but I would err on the side of humor.
I mean, that's sort of the bizarre advantage that people on death row have. They know their last moments, so they know their last words. They have a chance to prepare them. The rest of us don't have that opportunity. How do you think it changes the words?
I think it just lends more weight to them. As I say in the introduction, I think last words matter because they cannot be taken back. And I think all of us have that sort of primal curiosity of, you know, what does one say on the edge of oblivion?
Tell me about Marvin Francois.
Do you want to hear his his last words first? Okay. Marvin, I'm waiting for the page to come up here, but he was convicted of multiple murders, and basically he had robbed a drug house, and his mask had slipped off. And he said basically everybody who saw his face had to die. So he shot six victims in the head with a shotgun, and two others were wounded but survived to help convict him. And he said, I am as a grain of sand on the beach of the black race. The black race has lost its pride and dignity and is slowly dying from within and without. My death ends my tears and the fortune of watching my race slowly die. If there is such a thing as the Antichrist, it ain't but one man, but the whole white race. So tremendously defiant.
You know, one of the things, Robert, that I found, because your book is chronological, that struck me was that no matter what age, what year you were drawing these from, the theme seemed to be the same. And it led me to start looking back in the 1600s and 1500s, and there's basic themes. There's those, like you said, who kind of tell a joke. There are some who call out to their family, I love you, Mom, send my love to my daughter. There's some who deny their crime. But the basic themes, that you, as John said, you can categorize them. While cultural changes, that doesn't change.
Right, right, and you're exactly right. Like again, sort of humanity doesn't shift within the words, but the form does. You know, for example, when executions were more public, there's a greater sense of oration of a speech when people are speaking from the gallows, and then as you sort of move forward in time, you have more people speaking directly to victims' families and whatnot. They become more intimate as they move behind jailhouse walls.
And as you get really contemporary, it seems as though they're like lines from the the TV series The Office. They're basically talking to other folks on death row that they've seen every day for years and years and years.
Mm-hmm.
It's so interesting. Finally, how many of these lines called out to you, I'm innocent?
I mean, that really wasn't the focus of the book, but I know, for example, that there are at least, you know, a handful of them who are, just because they've been proven so.
Right.
Of course, there are the accused Salem witches who, it took more than 300 years for them to have their names cleared in Massachusetts, but there's also a guy named William Jackson Marion, who was executed in Nebraska, about 130 years ago, and you know he was accused of killing a good friend, and he was actually convicted twice by juries.
His innocence is for all to read in your book, Last Words of the Executed. Robert Elder, thanks so much.
You can read a selection of five of the last words at our website, thetakeaway.org. I'm Celeste Headley.
I'm John Hockenberry. Thinking about those last words. It's The Takeaway.